It's April 3rd. I'm Brian Dean Wright, former CIA operations officer, and this is The Wright Report. Hey, good day to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Wright Report, your daily news podcast. I've got five briefs for you this morning that are shaping America and the world. First up, a new law in Scotland promises to arrest people if they are found to be hateful. That could include a very famous British author named J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame. Details on that shortly. Next, we return to Germany this morning to talk about the mystery of something called Havana Syndrome. That is a sickness that has affected U.S. intel officers and diplomats over the years. But is it real? More on that in a bit. Third, the Middle East is growing hotter this morning with oil prices popping up and Israel facing criticism over a missile strike. We'll talk about why we should care. Fourth, we fly to South America later this morning to listen to a nasty war of words between the region's presidents. We'll talk about why we should care, but fair warning, that brief is not suitable for little ears. Finally, we wrap up in the city of Baltimore, Maryland this morning to talk about a new study that showed how one neighborhood there dramatically reduced their crime rates, and it has to do with alcohol. But before we get to that, let's get to our top story of the morning with a quick note about breaking news out of Taiwan. The country was hit by a 7.4 earthquake on the Richter scale yesterday, sending a tsunami into neighboring islands. I'll keep watch on the results of this throughout the day today, and critically, how Beijing might use this moment to their advantage. More to come. Meanwhile, let us begin our scheduled Wright Report in the beautiful lands of Scotland this morning, but you might want to avoid going there, at least for a while. That's because on Monday, the government began implementing a new law that arrests people for what they say are hateful acts or hateful statements. But what exactly might those acts or statements be? Well, that question and a whole bunch of others are causing chaos and confusion in Scotland this morning, with nearly 4,000 complaints quickly filed, and the police are now overwhelmed. So to understand exactly what's going on and why we should care, let's start with the law itself. It's called the Hate Crime and Public Order Scotland Act of 2021. And here's the promise. Scottish police are now mandated to investigate and arrest people who are accused of, quote, stirring up hatred that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive, end quote. The law states that the hate must be regarding someone's age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, or transgender identity. Not included in that list are comments or acts based on someone's sex. In other words, it's still completely fine to say very hateful things about women in Scotland. Supporters of this new law, like the First Minister, say it's great and important, actually, to use the law to get a hold of some terrible cases of hatred, especially directed towards gay or transgender people. But critics disagree. They say that the law's wording is very vague, that opens it up to abuse, and it quite literally requires police to police speech. And here's part of the problem with that. At least a third of Scotland's police have yet to be trained on what exactly constitutes a hate crime. But now, they're obligated to do so with these nearly 4,000 complaints that were filed in the first 24 to 48 hours after the law went into effect. And one of those complaints has to do with a gal named J.K. Rowling. As listeners might know, she is the author of the popular book series Harry Potter. She has also been a vocal critic of this law, along with the transgender movement in the UK. And that is why she dared Scottish police to arrest her on Monday or Tuesday after she posted a series of tweets on the social media platform X or Twitter. It was a list of transgender women in the UK who were known to be pedophiles, rapists, and murderers. Ms. Rowling said that these trans people are not only bad, but they're not women either. They are, in fact, biological men, and that really matters. She then called upon all actual women in the UK to say or post her exact same argument. In fact, she then said that she would repeat all of their statements in public, and together they would face jail time if necessary. As of this recording, however, Scottish police have decided not to pursue charges against Ms. Rowling, at least for her tweets on Monday. They said that those statements do not meet the new threshold for hate. Well, that prompted an immediate degree of outrage from the transgender community in the UK. For example, one biological man who lives as a trans woman has lodged a new complaint against Ms. Rowling and is demanding her arrest for misgendering her. One final thing to note, the UK Prime Minister, Mr. Sunak, said that he stands with Ms. Rowling for, quote, stating simple facts on biology, end quote. He also said that the UK has a very long history of supporting free speech and will continue to do so. Although that claim is under a degree of doubt this very early morning hours. And with those facts and data, let me offer you my analysis and opinion, thinking about why we should care. First, it's a remarkable thing, isn't it? We've got a major Western power that has decided to use police to police free speech. Now, that is normally the stuff of tyrannical regimes. And I think it's especially incredible to think about when we consider the UK's history. They, of course, launched individual freedoms in many ways with the Magna Carta. And then that inspired the US Bill of Rights. So when you think about what the UK is doing this morning, it suggests that perhaps the Western civilization that we have all long enjoyed and loved is losing some of the foundations that they're all built on, which, of course, would be individual liberty. Second, regimes and dictatorships around the world are watching this new law, and they are doing so closely. And I assure you that some of them will adopt similar laws to this one in Scotland. So, for example, you would imagine that a leader in, say, Uganda might declare through a law that if you say something bad or mean or hateful about, say, his tribe, he is going to throw you in prison. And if he does that, the West, whether that be the UK or the United States, is not going to have a logical leg to stand on if they try to push back. Third, this same law and its logic, sadly to say, it's coming here to America. And that's because this ideology and its organizers are not confined just to the UK. In fact, it's already here. The U.S. Department of Justice already prosecutes federal hate crime laws. And as they say, quote, different jurisdictions define hate crimes differently to include different bias motivations, end quote. In other words, folks, how these hate crime laws get applied in this country and to whom, to which categories, that depends largely on the passions and the politics of the prosecutors and the district attorneys and the judges involved. And that means, holy smokes, we've got an open door eventually to tyranny. Now, to be fair, supporters of these hate crime laws say that there really needs to be a special set of criminal laws if you've got a criminal who is targeting people for their immutable characteristics. In other words, they're saying that, look, if we've got a black criminal who is targeting a white person only because of the color of their skin or vice versa, that is not only bad, but we should add a little extra law in the mix to prosecute the person. But what we are seeing in Scotland this morning is that the devil is in the details, as always, when you try to take that kind of idea or that logic and then execute it in a nation's system of jurisprudence. Because in Scotland, they've now got 3,800 complaints and counting from mostly gender activists who are saying that people like J.K. Rowling are being mean to them. And so the response is, call the cops. And that seems bad. So do keep that in mind this summer if you plan on traveling. I might skip Scotland, at least for now. And with that, we turn to our second report of the morning. We've got some news out of Germany to put on our radars. It involves something called Havana Syndrome. For folks unaware, that is a collection of symptoms first reported by U.S. Embassy personnel in Cuba back in the year 2016. They said that they experienced extreme headaches, nausea, bloody noses, and memory loss after getting hit with, well, it felt to them like a piercing sound or a wave of energy that, in some cases, knocked them unconscious. Also affected, they said, were their electronics. There were some swollen or otherwise overheated batteries. Finally, these folks said that their pets had some pretty dramatic changes too, especially to their personalities. So from that point on, over the next 8 years, about 1,000 U.S. diplomats and intel officers all around the world have claimed that they too have been victims of this same kind of attack. With the exact causes, though, or the culprits, unclear. The suspicion, though, for years was a foreign adversary, say the Chinese or the Russians, and they were using a directed energy weapon or acoustic weapon of some kind. Well, that is why the U.S. government launched an investigation into this matter years ago and began compensating the alleged victims. Finally, over the past couple of years, they issued a series of reports that found no evidence that any adversary actually used any known weapon, and Havana syndrome isn't really a thing. That is to say that the people are definitely experiencing mal symptoms. It's just not from the directed energy weapons that perhaps they might have thought. Congress, however, seems a little less convinced of this U.S. government report, mostly authored by the CIA and Office of Director of National Intelligence. Congress announced back in February that they would continue the investigation into these strange reports of Havana syndrome. And then earlier this week, we got some fascinating news out of Germany. In short, U.S. and European press outlets, to include in Germany, they did a year-long investigation, and they say that they discovered that actually the first attack, as it were, was not in Havana, Cuba. It was in Frankfurt, Germany, back in the year 2014. Yes, they conducted this one-year investigation, and they discovered this very strange and interesting case in Germany. It was a U.S. intel officer who apparently suffered a traumatic brain injury after he said an energy beam or wave knocked him unconscious. Well, the culprit to all of these attacks, according to this latest investigation by German and U.S. Media outlets, the culprit is Russia's military intelligence agency called the GRU. Well, if that's true, it would arguably prompt arguments, and as you would imagine, in D.C. and Europe, that Moscow has more or less engaged in acts of war or something very close to it. In fact, that was the statement issued by the lawyer representing all the Havana syndrome sufferers yesterday. So the question, of course, is this latest news a big deal? Could it change the calculus between D.C. and European capitals in Russia? Have we been attacked? Well, according to statements by the White House, the FBI, and U.S. intel agencies, they say probably not. But they're going to look into it. In the meantime, they say that their assessment remains the same. They do not believe that the Havana syndrome is real. With those facts and data, let me now offer you my quick reflection. We know that Russia is a very aggressive adversary. We know that the Chinese are even more so. But I'll tell you what most people don't know is that we have been in a covert war against both of those nations for at least the last 10 years. And we have done some very nasty things to them, and they are doing some very nasty things to us. So could Havana syndrome be a part of this covert spy versus spy warfare? You bet. Is it provable? Probably not. But it is still worthy of our attention and putting it on our radars this morning, and so we shall. I'll be watching for more details given the potential fallout if it is proven that these attacks are coming from the Russians. More to come. And with that, let's take our first break of the morning. For subscribers listening at rightreport.substack.com, thank you. Meanwhile, for my other loyal listeners, I offer you an equal thanks and do enjoy the next three folks who are sponsoring the episode this morning. Some great companies. So proud to support them. We'll be right back. Folks, we need to talk about Superbeats Heart Chews because I don't know how they're making these things. Maybe magic, who knows? But here's what I do know. Just two little chews a day, and I get a shot of energy, plus performance and endurance. And that's been true since I started taking Superbeats Chews just a couple months ago. Just two little chews at breakfast, and I'm set. Also, this is amazing. If you pair Superbeats with a healthy lifestyle, the antioxidants in these chews are clinically shown to be nearly two times more effective at promoting normal blood pressure than a healthy lifestyle alone. So do what I did. Go to getsuperbeets.com, that's BEETS.com, and use promo code RIGHT, and that will get you a 30-day supply of Superbeats Heart Chews for free and 15% off your first order. What? Yes. Go to getsuperbeets.com, use that promo code RIGHT, and get the heart-healthy energy you need and support for healthy blood pressure, too. You'll be so glad you did. I got an email from Mark and Kathy in Central Ohio about JaceMedical.com. Brian, they wrote, "We heard about Jace from your podcast and we ordered some antibiotics and our cholesterol medicines. We just wanted to make sure that we have peace of mind in case things go south, and we're now set. So much appreciated. Well, Mark and Kathy, you are welcome. And this is why I love being so choosy about my ad partners. I can find companies like Jace Medical. They provide life-saving prescription medications delivered right to your door. And by now, you all know how easy it is. You just go to jasemedical.com. You fill out a simple online form, and in no time flat, you will get your medicines. And in some cases, you'll have a quick phone call with one of their board-certified physicians to make sure you're getting exactly what you need. But either way, it's a great service. So go to jasemedical.com. That's jasemedical.com. And when you enter promo code RIGHT at checkout, you are going to get a great discount on your order. Again, folks, that is promo code RIGHT, W-R-I-G-H-T, at jasemedical.com. That's jasemedical.com. And do this today, because there is no telling what tomorrow might bring. Somewhere this morning in capitals in America and Europe, leaders are planning how to best seize Russian financial assets. We spoke of this in early January and all the related threats to the U.S. dollar. But it could also have terrible impacts on our pocketbooks, too. So if you're looking for ways to diversify your investments, and boy, we should, consider physical gold and silver, and consider American Hartford Gold. They are the precious metal dealer that I use and trust. When you give them a call, they will explain how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by purchasing physical gold and silver, and feel very comfortable using American Hartford Gold, as they have an A-plus ranking from the Better Business Bureau. So either give them a call at 866-353-2694. Again, that's 866-353-2694. Or just text them. Text RIGHT, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532. And gosh, that's easy. Again, text W-R-I-G-H-T to 65532. And when you do, they are going to give you up to $5,000 worth of free silver on your first order, depending on your total purchase. So give them a call at 866-353-2694 or text my last name, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532. And folks, buy that physical gold and silver with American Hartford Gold. Welcome back to the Wright Report. Let's continue with our briefs this morning with a new stop in the Middle East. We are back this morning to the region for two updates. The first is about news regarding Syria, which I shared with you yesterday. But to quickly refresh our memories, the Israelis likely struck an Iranian embassy compound in the capital of Damascus, killing scores of people, including a very senior military officer. As I shared with you, Iran would be looking for revenge, probably with any U.S. troops in the region. But that would also, in turn, create some very clear impacts on our pocketbooks, namely oil prices. And in fact, that is what we are seeing this morning. The price of oil has popped higher to a six-month high. As Bloomberg News reports, oil prices hit $88 a barrel for global Brent oil. Meanwhile, West Texas Intermediate was up as well. All in all, crude oil has risen about 20% so far this year, with similar spikes after events like the one that we saw in Syria earlier this week. Although I should emphasize that these spikes are not wholly because of, say, regional events in the Middle East. We also know that global oil consumption is up, especially in China. Plus, we've got some production issues, cuts from OPEC nations as well. So combine all of that with the news that I've given you about Ukraine's drone strikes on those Russian refineries. Well, folks, it means that we've got some serious price hikes, not just in terms of crude oil, but also gas and diesel prices. It's already happening. It's going to happen even further throughout the spring and summer. More to come. Meanwhile, we've got some very sad news to talk about in Israel and the Gaza Strip. The Israeli government is acknowledging an accidental missile strike against aid workers. Charity workers with an organization called World Central Kitchen were hit this week in the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military struck one of their vehicles, killing everyone inside. That prompted international outcry, certainly over the past 24 hours, whether that be in the U.S., Europe, and throughout the Middle East. Well, that led to a preliminary investigation by the Israelis and then a quick apology by Israel's president and prime minister. They acknowledged that there was an accident that took place. They are now promising a full investigation. But that is not enough for Israel's critics. Socialist representatives in the U.S., like Rashida Tlaib, said yesterday that Israel actually targeted those aid workers as a, a warning to all other aid organizations. Other Democrats joined her in that assessment. As reported by Politico magazine and others, Marxists like Senator Bernie Sanders are saying the same. For what it's worth, the White House is also joining those far-left representatives condemning Israel. Joe Biden said he is outraged, and he actually spoke directly with the aid organization and its lead founder to apologize and say that he stands beside them. But Biden is facing renewed criticism and pressure from those fellow Democrats to use this moment to stop sending Israel war aid. The Washington Post and Reuters News Service report that the White House continues to provide billions of dollars in war material, whether that be missiles or jets. But that is despite the fact that the Israelis, or according to these Democrats, are committing acts of genocide. And yet, to be fair, many of these same Democrats also call for Israel to be removed from the Middle East. Representative Tlaib and other leftists will chant, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And that chant has long been used by activists to call for the destruction of the Israeli state. It is a phrase that dates back to the 1980s. So with those facts and data, let me now offer you my brief analysis and opinion. For folks out there who are veterans, you all know that this is true. War is hell. Awful things happen. And they happen to good people, to bad people, and people who have conflicted motivations and interests. So here's what I mean by that. 2 weeks ago, the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research conducted some daring polling inside of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. And here's what they found. First, over 70% of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip support Hamas and their terror attacks. Second, an astonishing 93% said that Hamas never commits war crimes against civilians, including things like rape or murder. Finally, Palestinians in both the Gaza Strip and the West Bank continue to widely support Hamas as their best, most appropriate leaders for the future. So let us consider that plus this. Hamas continues to say that they will keep attacking Israel again and again until the Jewish people are removed. They say that they will not stop until the whole of Israel is gone and Palestine is restored, or so they argue. And they have said that repeatedly in public over and over again. Also, I should note that this call to annihilate the Jewish state is in their founding documents. So let us imagine that that is your adversary. And put aside whether you like Israel or not. If we can imagine that that is our adversary, what would our reasonable options be? How do you fight an adversary, a population, where 93% support a terror organization that wants to kill you? Do you embrace a ceasefire with those terrorists, which so many folks are calling for, or do you keep fighting until one side gives up or wins? Well, here's my point. Given this scenario, I think that a reasonable leader and a reasonable nation would continue to fight to the death of one side or the other. There's just no middle ground. None. And that means, boy, as war is hell, there are going to be acts of profound violence. Some are going to be justified and others will be deeply mistaken. And that's the painful reality this morning in Israel and the Gaza Strip. And that is something that I think that we should remember as we mourn the loss of those charity workers with the World Central Kitchen. And with that, we move on to our next piece of news of the morning. And for these next developments, we are going to leave the heaviness and the sorrow of the Middle East behind for the dramatics and these schoolyard taunts of South American leaders. And fair warning, this next piece of news is not appropriate for little ears. Here we go. Over the past few weeks, the presidents of Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela, and Colombia have gotten into a nasty set of fights and squabbles that, frankly, would be great for reality TV or a Latin American soap opera. So here's what we know and why we should care. The fun stuff. Let's kick off with the fun stuff. A lot of mudslinging started last fall when President Javier Milei won the office of the presidency in Argentina. As listeners will recall, he's that firebrand libertarian, and he does not like progressives or leftists. He has called them useless parasites, scum, and human excrement, which is a little bit of a problem because many folks are the leaders in Latin America or led by those leftist parasites. But I'll tell you, Mr. Milei does not care, quote, "This is no time for nice words and good manners," end quote. As the Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning, he carried that passion since he was inaugurated all the way through last week when he was sitting down with CNN in Spanish. He was asked about the presidents of the region, and he said that the presidents of Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela are truly despicable men. He said the same is true of Colombia's leftist president, a guy named Mr. Petro. Quote, "You can't expect much from someone like Petro, who has been a murderous terrorist and a communist," end quote. And for what it's worth, Milei is factually correct there. As listeners might recall from my previous briefs, Mr. Petro was jailed for his participating in leftist terrorism all the way back in the 1980s. Well, that aside, Mr. Petro was not pleased by this smear. He called Mr. Milei Latin America's Hitler. And next up, we have Mexico's leftist president, Mr. López Obrador. President Milei said of that Mexican leader and his supporters, well, they belong to a club of men with very small penises. Oh, dear. The Mexican leader insisted, first of all, that wasn't true. Okay. Plus, he said that Milei is a fascist, to which Mr. Milei said, thank you. I'm flattered. And next, there is also a big fight between Mr. Milei and the Marxist dictatorship in Venezuela. It started after Milei allowed the U.S. government to seize a Boeing 747 that belonged to the dictatorship. It was on Argentine soil at the time. To which Venezuela's president, Mr. Maduro, tweeted out his shock. Quote, "They stole our plane. Crazy Milei? Dios mío. He acts crazy or he is crazy or both," end quote. Well, Mr. Maduro and his foreign ministry then called Milei a neo-Nazi. All right. Well, the point is, this has been going on now for months and months with heads of state in Latin America trash-talking each other and mocking things like their manhoods. And that has led former diplomats in the United States and foreign policy think tanks in D.C. to just clutch their pearls this morning. They are mortified at how unbecoming these men are getting towards each other. Case in point, former U.S. diplomat Eric Farnsworth told the Wall Street Journal that, quote, "A lot of it just seems so unnecessary. What's the point of this?" end quote. Which takes me to my analysis and opinion, actually, pivoting now away from facts and data. So what is the point of this? To help us understand, let's look at some reporting from the French media wire service AFP. A couple months ago, they said that voters in Latin America are tired with business as usual. They are tired of the niceties and the lectures about democracy and social decorum. They want in firebrands, people who are going to upset the apple cart. Why? Well, as the AFP reported, crime is rampant. Gangs are on the loose. Drugs are being used more widely than ever before. And their economies are absolutely in the tank. And they have had enough of the ruling classes, both on the left and the right, by the way. They just want normal again. And that is why men like Mr. Milei or El Salvador's president, a guy named Bukele that we've talked about, they are so very popular with the man and woman on the street. But they are deeply unpopular with the elites and the media. Which, come to think of it, sounds a little bit familiar. Like him or not, Donald Trump has a lot of these same characteristics as Mr. Milei or Mr. Bukele. Trump, well, he pops off, doesn't he, with whatever he feels. He says incredibly inappropriate things sometimes, but, well, two things. He makes you laugh, sometimes anyway, but oftentimes he's right. And you can't help but cheer on a guy, whether that be Milei or Bukele or Trump, when they're taking a shot at some smug journalist or elite politician. So that, I think, is why this news in Central and South America is so important. The angst of all the people in these nations, it's actually not just confined to Central or South America, nor is it confined to the United States. We are seeing this in Europe, too. People throughout the world have just had enough. And they're gravitating towards these populist movements led by people like Milei or Bukele or Donald Trump. But I'll tell you, at the end of the day, it's really not about left or right. It is just about people who want normal back, even if that might take some off-color tweets to get there. And with that, we have our final stop of the morning. We are off to the city of Baltimore, Maryland, for a fresh study about how one neighborhood in that city dramatically reduced their crime rates, and it has to do with booze. Researchers from the states of Massachusetts and California were focused on how cities throughout America might reduce their crime rates, and they had one idea. There is a ton of data showing a direct connection between the number of alcohol-selling businesses and neighborhood crime. In other words, the more liquor stores and bars, the more crime. But what if those businesses were simply open for fewer hours a day? What if they stopped selling alcohol from, say, 10 p.m. to nothing before 9 a.m.? Could that reduction of hours actually lower crime? Well, they got a natural experiment to answer those questions after the state of Maryland passed something called the Senate Bill 571. It limited the sale of alcohol from 20 hours per day to 13 hours per day and no later than 10 p.m. The researchers then looked at both violent crime like homicide, robbery, and rape, plus less violent crimes like common assault. They also considered whether those crimes just shifted to different hours of the day instead of, say, between 10 p.m. and 9 a.m. Well, looking at the data, these researchers were absolutely shocked. There was an immediate 51% drop in homicides after this law went into effect, and that was just within the first month. There was also another 23% decline in all violent crimes in the surrounding areas, too. The researchers said that they want to do more studying of this phenomenon. They want to try to replicate it in other cities and states for longer periods of time. But they said that the data were pretty overwhelming. They're offering this advice to city leaders around this country. If you are looking for a relatively simple and cheap way to cut back on crime, just stop selling booze late at night through the early morning hours. So there you go. For folks interested, this study was published on Monday in the journal that is called the AMA Internal Medicine. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we conclude your morning brief. As always, I will see you tomorrow, God willing. Until then, I leave you with the creed of every good spy and every wise American. They're the words from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Good day.